Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. Now, this episode is going to be a bit on the short side, and I'm going to try and cover everything as quickly as possible, mainly because, well, it's my birthday, and I want to enjoy most of the day, so I didn't want to go off and produce a long show. Now, with that said, as I start off, I've said that there's going to be a short show in the past, and it ended up being an hour and 20 minutes, so, you know, hopefully I'm able to keep this to the short plan that I have. All right. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and get into today's episode. Starting off here is Democrats' stupidity. Yes. I mean, I want to go through and start labeling segments of the show, stupid Democrats, along with ideological subversion, because I want to make sure that you're aware of ideological subversion, along with Democrat corruption. I mean, I could label a lot of segments on the show, but let's go ahead and start with Democrat stupidity. So as you remember, all last year, there was this whole defund the police movement organized by Black Lives Matter, based off of the fictional narrative that George Floyd was killed by a police officer when in fact he died of a drug overdose while in custody of the police, or more specifically, during the arrest by a police officer. But they created the whole fictional narrative such that they convicted an innocent officer of a crime of killing George Floyd, even though all the evidence proved it was a drug overdose. And Democrats across the country decided that they were going to go along with this whole defund the police movement. Now, it was during a pandemic. They were going off and trying to say, hey, you know, we're going to defund the police. You're not going to get police protection. And during the pandemic, they were also releasing criminals from prison while also trying to go off and say on the campaign trails that they were going to take away your gun rights. What could possibly go wrong here with what the Democrats were proposing? Defund the police, release criminals, and try to take away your guns. It's a recipe for disaster. Let's face it. Let's be honest. And yet they think they're smart. They're going off and they're doing this because they're trying to pander to the crowd. And a lot of mayors and a lot of city councils in Democrat areas went through to try and defund the police. Well, here we go. Atlanta mayoral candidate who voted to defund the police had their car stolen in broad daylight. Yes. So their ideas and their policies, their narratives are coming back to bite them. They went off with the whole defund the police movement, demonized the police. Now they're finding themselves in a bit of trouble. One, a lot of police officers in left-wing cities have resigned. And instead, they have decided to go off and join police forces in other parts of the country run by conservatives, whereby they're not demonized. Now, here's another issue that is coming out as about. The police officers that are leaving Democrat areas and going to Republican areas are not only enjoying the fact that they're not being demonized for doing the job that they were asked to do by government to enforce laws passed by government, but in going to more conservative areas, they are finding that there's less crime. Yes. And so they have decided to leave left-wing cities that are demonizing them, attacking them, and are threatening to throw them in jail for doing their job. They're leaving those cities that have the high crime areas, going to conservative areas of the country, finding out that there's less crime and people aren't trying to throw them in jail for doing the job that the government asked them to do. Isn't that amazing? And so Democrats are finding themselves in an area or in a position where their policies are complete trash. You ever notice how Democrat areas are where all the crimes are taking place? They're, well, not all the crimes, but where they have the highest crime rates, where racism and hate crimes are skyrocketing, where all the mass shootings are taking place. And yet they claim that they're going to solve that, that they're going to be able to lead the way to a utopian society. And yet in Republican areas, what do you notice? You notice lower crime rates. You notice that hate crimes are not taking place in conservative areas or in areas that are dominated by conservatives. Does that mean there's no crime? No, but the crime rate is a fraction of what it is in liberal areas. Isn't that amazing? And so now Democrats are finding out that the criminals are starting to roam wild, even targeting and stealing the vehicles of political candidates and political office holders. And now they're going to find themselves in a situation where they're trying to reverse course, you know, refund the police, try and bring the police officers back. And the police officers are pretty much in a situation of going, nah, why would we come back to a situation where you're just going to flip position whenever it's politically convenient and target us and treat us like crap while you continue to engage in policies that encourage criminals? But going off and seeing how their policies are directly biting them in the butt, and now criminals are even going off and carjacking, stealing their own vehicles, the Democrats' vehicles, after they move to defund the police, is just absolutely hilarious. And is just another example of how Democrat policies always blow up in their face and descend into chaos. Now, I recently saw a study here, or a report, that when people are leaving Democrat states after seeing how horrible liberal policies are after living under them, that they were so bad that they were forced to leave the state, that when they do go to Republican states, you know, and this gives me encouragement, because I was thinking that, okay, they ruin their own state voting for every left-wing policy. Then they would leave, go to red states, Republican states, and then they would not learn from anything and then go through and just re-vote for all Democrat policies in the new area like Locust. But it turns out that if this report is right, when Democrat cities are so bad that people are fleeing them in droves because of the policies destroyed the state, destroyed the city, that when they are moving to a different area, they're changing their registration to Republicans. Now, yes, I know some of them are Republicans that are leaving the state, or independents leaving the state, but even those who are registered Democrats leaving Democrat states because of how horrible and how bad they have gotten. When they are moving to red states, they are changing their political affiliation and registering as Republicans. So apparently, they are, at least to some degree, learning from their mistakes. And if I were to go back to the video where we talked about ideological subversion, the interview back in 1984, he talked about how when those who are on your sides become disillusioned, you know, disillusioned, their eyes become wide open and they realize what's really going on or how bad things are, they become the worst opponent of your ideology, you know, of Marxist-Leninist ideology. And I think the Democrats are in some ways finding that out, that after being able to get through and enact all their wish list policies, that it has created such chaos, such disaster, such an unlivable environment for so many that they are leaving in droves, disillusioned by what the Democrats claim they stand for and, you know, all their promises of free everything and utopian society. They become so disillusioned that they are signing up and changing affiliations to Republicans, moving to red states, and they're going to be voting Republican because they want to strengthen the Republican Party so that the new state that they move to doesn't get destroyed and descend into the crap hole that they just left. So it turns out there's a little bit of hope. Maybe one of the best way to get past ideological subversion is for more and more people to be subjected to the claims and the views and the results of Democrat policies so that they can see for themselves how horrible it is, and that firsthand experience will make sure that they never vote Democrat again. Now, that depends, though. And what does that depend on? Their capacity to learn from past mistakes. All right, so as long as they can learn from past mistakes and realize, hey, we voted for everything that was supposed to be leading us to a utopian society. Yeah, I know. I got a four-year-old stomping around. I can't control a four-year-old from just running from one room to the next. But it's based off of their capacity to learn. You know, whether they can realize that it's their policies that they voted for and the promises of utopian society that destroyed their area, or whether or not the indoctrination is so complete that no matter what, they can't come to any reasonable, rational conclusion. But if this report is right, and Democrats fleeing from Democrat states and cities because all the Democrat policies have destroyed the area, made it unlivable, and are registering as Republicans, maybe that is one of the best ways to counter ideological subversion short term. Yes, we need to make sure that we are competing and going in on the schools, but helping to disillusion the indoctrinated against the horrible ideology of the left, might be good short term while going in and fighting in the schools. And when I say fighting in the schools, I mean eliminating left-wing indoctrination. Marxist indoctrination in the school is the long-term strategy. Now, speaking of ideological subversion, I have a couple of articles here which, once again, highlights and reflects how ideological subversion is just out in the open right now. So let's go ahead and take a look at a couple of examples. One, and you got to remember, ideological subversion is to promote the ideology of your political enemy, which to the United States would be Marxist-Leninist societies, and expose them, if you want to go off and start, some sort of race things, expose them to the idea of racism as good, while then either depriving of your home country's ideology or demonizing your home country's ideology. Okay, so let's go on here. So first article from the Daily Wire, Mark Lamont Hill to critical race theory critic. Name something positive about being white. All right, this is a situation where the Democrats are trying to say racism is perfectly fine so long as they're the ones who are being deemed the superior race, I guess. Whatever. So let's go ahead and go through this article, and then I'm going to point out why their whole name something positive about being white is a crap. All right. So racial activist and Black News Tonight host Mark Lamont Hill this week asked Christopher Rufo, an outspoken critic of critical race theory, why kids in school should not be taught that whiteness is all negative. Now think about that. You have to try and justify to the left why being white, why the color of your skin is not anything but negative. That the color of your skin determines whether you're a horrible person. Why shouldn't we teach the kids that? And they just ask that as if it's just a given that skin color determines whether someone is good or bad, right or wrong, horrible. Now, pressing Rufo to name something he likes about being white. Now he goes on in the article, if you're saying whiteness is being construed as negative and it shouldn't be, name something positive that you like about being white, the host again asked Rufo, who initially rejected the premise. Rufo again rejects the premise and pointed out progressive literature that's being used in public schools, which ascribes things like timelines, objectivity, and rationality to being white. These are very strange things to ascribe to a racial identity, he explains. My view is that actually these things should be ascribed to every individual human being, regardless of whatever racial category we impose on them. And then it's brought up again, if whiteness isn't a negative thing, and there is something that you actually, and that whiteness actually shouldn't be construed as all negative, name something positive that you believe is positive about being white. Okay, so let's go ahead and break this down a little bit here. The color of your skin, there's nothing good or bad about it. It just is. Is oxygen all positive, all negative? Well, no, it just is. Is the sun good or bad? It just is there, right? It doesn't have a good or bad. It just exists, right? It's not like, there's something inherent about skin color that is all negative, all positive, right? But they're trying to set it up that if you have or are part of a racial group, that you're either good or bad just because you're part of that racial group, just because you have that skin color. And that is horrible. And look at the things that they are ascribing to whiteness. Timelines? The entire human race lives in linear time where we have each day, going forward, where you don't start off one day, old age, and the next day as a baby, and the next day as just a middle-aged adult. You don't jump all over in the time, in time. We all start off as young babies, and day after day we get older and older and older. No day can be repeated, right? We only exist in the day that we are in. The future is not guaranteed, and we have no idea what's going to happen, what's going to develop the following days. We don't know how many days we have. we don't know, you know, what's going to happen in the future. Linear time is not something that's based off of skin color. It's the entire planet, every human, every animal, every, you know, living thing on this planet exists in linear time. All right. So timelines are not inherent to any racial group or identity, but it's being ascribed to whiteness, which is part of that whole warp everybody's sense of reality, you know, so that they can't tell anything. Objectivity. That is not a racial thing. Objectivity is just being able to try and analyze things without a bias or preconceived notion. You know, now our ability to achieve objectivity, you know, may be questionable, but the idea of objectivity itself is not racial. I mean, think about that. Objectivity, that is the basis of science, that you have to be objective and let the facts and the data, you know, lead to the conclusion, not your preconceived notions. That is more of a principle about science getting to the truth. All right. And then rationality. Well, there's a lot of things that I could say about rationality and how it's being ascribed to whiteness. You know, so are you trying to say that, you know, people who are not white are not rational, are not logical? Well, I mean, ideological subversion would want to destroy any idea of rationality. But, I mean, if you're ascribing that to the idea that only white people engage in rationality, then that's not going off and being negative against a racialized, against white people. That would almost seem like you're kind of insulting your own skin color there. But, I mean, just think about that for a moment. My God. You know, these people, you know, I do not understand how they could be so insane. How, even with ideological subversion, I don't understand how people can be so Looney Tunes. Okay, so anyways, here we go on another article here as it relates to ideological subversion. Okay, report, nation's largest defense contractor sent execs on a retreat to atone for their white male privilege. You know, and we go through ideological subversion in here, and the ideological subversion that I want to talk about is not, you know, it's not the anti-white necessarily. You know, whiteness is not an ideology of the country, but the whole we as a nation are looking to eliminate racism from the country. That is an ideology, you know, equality. You know, that every person is treated equally under the law. That is the ideology that we subscribe to. But the left is trying to subvert that by claiming that if you are, you know, you have this skin color, you're an oppressor. You have this skin color, you're an oppressed. And that, you know, that is how they are promoting everything to everybody. And therefore, just by virtue of your skin color, you either got to apologize or atone for things that you yourself never actually committed. That violates the entire ideology of equality under the law, equal protection under the law, that all men are created equal, or all persons are created equal. You know, and that is what they are trying to subvert, and what they are and now they're trying to go off and claim that, you know, if you share a skin color with anybody who has ever done anything bad, which I don't get why they're trying to push for that, because, you know, you take a look at that means every group is horrible. Well, then again, that would put everybody on an equal footing. But take a look at what they're trying to go through and ascribe to whiteness here in this training. So Lockheed Martin, the nation's largest and most prominent defense contractor, reportedly had a white male executives undergo, and it's white and male, you know, not white females, white and male, you know, white male executives undergo a diversity training program. You know, it's amazing how they call it diversity training, and yet the diversity training is, if you're a white male, you are a horrible, garbage, evil person. How is that diversity training? They're using them and manipulating language. They're using language to say one thing, to describe something that has nothing to do with the words they're using to describe it. But to undergo diversity training programs last year intended to help them atone for their white male privilege. What white male privilege? This is a myth. There is no such thing. Now, this article goes on to talk about what they were covering in their diversity training program. And part of that was to encourage a list of connotations often associated with white men. And the terms that they came up with in that list was old, racist, privileged, anti-woman, angry, Aryan Nation, KKK, founding fathers, guns, guilty, conservative. You understand what they are doing here. You know, they're trying to say that if you're a white man, then you're automatically associated with KKK, Aryan Nation. And then they're also trying to associate the founding fathers with the KKK and Aryan Nation. Or you having the right to defend yourself under the Second Amendment. Or conservative as KKK and Aryan Nation, even though the Republican Party and conservatives were the ones that led the charge against the KKK, the Aryan Nation, and that it was the Democrats that supported it. But you get this, how they try to do this word association in order to get you to associate the anything that has to do with their political opponent with something that is negative. It's like what a 1960s video of the Birch Society talking about the how the communists operate, and that the directive was to try and associate your political opponents or your ideological opponents or just the people you don't like with words that have already in the public mind a bad smell. But think about that. They're trying to associate the founding fathers with the KKK and Aryan Nation, that just being a white man is associated with racism, KKK, guilty, our conservative ideology, trying to associate that with racism, the KKK, the Aryan Nation, or being anti-woman. None of these words have any association with white men. There are white men who are Democrats. There are white men who are Republicans. There are white men who, okay, yes, some may be sexist, but most are not. You know, and in every one of these situations, you can find, you know, white men on just about both sides of the aisle. Now, when it comes to KKK, Aryan Nation, you know, and racism, no, that is more exclusively only a Democrat side. And even on the Democrat side, well, not all. So, I mean, they're going off and trying to create these word associations and trying to get you to regurgitate and go through. I mean, this is part of how ideological subversion works, is that you demonize any ideology of your home country. You try to demonize anybody who goes through and stands up or tries to resist the subversion, you know, and through repetition, they're just going through here, and they are just horrible what the Democrats are doing. It's unbelievable. And let's be 100% honest. What the Democrats are doing is they are blatantly engaged in racism. It's just blatant racism, naked racism, the same hate and racism that the Democrats have been engaged in since the founding of the country. They just changed what skin color that they are targeting with their naked racism. You know, and when I say that, I shouldn't say that they went from targeting blacks to just targeting whites. They went from targeting blacks, and then while they continued targeting blacks, they decided to also target white skin. They're trying to just engage in racism, not because they actually believe in racial superiority like they did in the past, but because they're trying to keep the country divided against itself. A united country with shared identity and values is what is considered to be a horrible enemy or a huge obstacle to the Marxists and Leninists. So they have to keep us divided. They have to keep us pit against each other so that they can go through and get and enact their Marxist-Leninist plans to basically throw out the Constitution, throw out the government, or descend our civilization, Western culture, into complete chaos. It's all about, you know, when we get to, let me try and explain it this way. When we get to what is the goal of ideological subversion? Well, the end result, yes, is to, you know, overthrow democracy, overthrow our constitutional republic. But there are steps that you need to go through to get to that point. And those steps are designed to first destabilize a country, to destabilize it, to turn it into complete chaos. And then from chaos, then you can enact stage two, which is the overthrow and replacement of government. Okay, now looking at how long this episode is going so far and looking how I always underestimate how long it's going to take me to get through everything. When I came up with today's show plan, thought I'd be able to go through, breeze right through it, and keep the episode short. But I've only gotten through, one out of the four segments that I had set up for today. I went off a little bit too long on all of this. So I'm only going to get to one more story, and then I'm just going to end this. So then, after they go off, and they start, attacking that, attacking people based off of skin color, they also got to go off and throw in some attacks on ideology here. So here it is, another article. Public high school principal to valedictorian. Mentioning your Christian faith in graduation speech is not appropriate, but the valedictorian is fighting back. So here it is. It is no doubt that, the founding principles of our country can be rooted in Christianity, and that Christianity has been a dominant faith in the United States. Okay. But now they're going off and they're attacking Christianity. Now they also attack Judaism as well. But the left is going through and trying to attack Christianity, trying to say Christianity is racist, Christianity is horrible, evil, and intolerant, when it's the exact opposite. It's about tolerance. It's about loving your neighbor as you're loving your neighbor, loving your enemy. That doesn't mean you have to agree and roll over for them. It just means you don't approach people with hate in your heart, even as you disagree with them. And there's a lot of tenets and a lot of deep, teachings in the Bible, and just going through it once, is not going to, give you the full understanding. You got to study it. You got to go through it multiple times to be able to fully grasp everything that the Bible is trying to teach you. Okay. But they're going off and trying to say, you're not allowed to go to Christianity. Christianity, is horrible. You can't mention it. And they always try to go off and they try to say, well, this is a public school and therefore you can't mention it in your speech. Right, we see that. So they're trying to subvert a traditional, dominant religion in the United States. And when I say dominant, I just mean it's what most people ascribe to, the most prominent religion in the country. Now, as we read this, and we notice that the principal was only bringing up that there's a problem mentioning faith in the valedictorian speech because she was Christian. Now, if we were to go through and take a look at it, on the flip side, let's say the valedictorian was Muslim and wanted to bring up how their Muslim faith, their Islamic faith, influenced their life and inspired them. Would there have been any pushback by the principal? Would the school have come through and said, no, you can't say that. That's inappropriate. No. And that's where we get into the whole ideological subversion, whereby you try to demonize and suppress and block views and that are traditional views of your home country and try to promote the views. And I know ideological subversion says the views of your enemies. I'll address that as it comes to the Islamic faith. But it tries to go off and say, no, you can't bring up this view, even though it's the traditional view of your country. But this view over here, that is not, historically native to your country. That is okay. That is fine. That you can go for. And so you see here, just from these examples, from the defense contractor sending the executives on the retreat, trying to associate, just the white skin color with all the negative connotations and trying to demonize it, to the, hosts on liberal channels trying to say that, being white and all that has a lot of horrible things to it. You're just a horrible person, that there, nothing positive about being white, to now trying to go off and say, well, Christianity is horrible. Christianity is bad. But they wouldn't go off and try and suppress anybody who was promoting their Islamic faith at the same function. So you see that, where they try to block the views of one while trying to promote the views of another, and how that works, how that's constantly going up as they try to change society towards a more Marxist-Leninist view. And so they're setting up, you know, and pitting people against each other. Now, let me finish by making this clear when it comes to Islam and what my view is on the Islamic community, whether Islam is the enemy of the United States or not. So I go off here and I've been trying to take a look at the, you know, Islamic community and all that since 9/11. You know, and before 9/11, I really, you know, was oblivious to, well, the Islamic faith. You know, to me, I wasn't aware, you know, of that as a religion. You know, yes, you know, when 9/11 happened, I was a senior in high school, but we're talking about way back in 2001. You know, my idea of the using the internet was going to chat rooms and using MSN Messenger to keep up, you know, or communicate with my friends when I wasn't around them. I wasn't going off and doing a whole lot of research into the Middle East. And so my first impression was that of 9/11. And then, you know, as the time's gone on and I've gone to look at the situation more, you know, my views have been, well, evolving as more information has come about. And so here's what I have to say. Whether or not the Islamic faith is or is not an enemy of the United States is a question that depends on an answer to another question. And so let's set this up for you here. There are a lot of countries that do practice Islam as their faith. There's in some of those countries, they promote death to America. They attack us. They want to see us dead. There are other countries that are predominantly Muslim who are our allies, who are our strategic partners, trading partners, defense partners, and so on. They don't want us dead. So whether or not Islam, if you want to name Islam as the enemy or not, would be dependent upon your view of which of those Islamic countries are actually practicing and true to their Islamic faith. If you believe that it's the Iranians, for example, that are the true practitioners of the Islamic faith, chanting death to America, well, then you would say, yes, Islam is an enemy of the United States as its views and religions. But if instead you go off and you think, well, no, let's, you know, it is the Saudi Arabia that is the true practitioners of the faith, or the United Arab Emirates that are the true practitioners of the faith of Islam, then you would say that no, Islam as a faith is not an enemy of the United States. But if you take out the religious aspect of it, right, maybe the faith of Islam is not the issue at hand here, but rather it is that some countries are headed by evil dictatorial tyrants and other countries are not. They may still have dictatorships and kings and all that, but they're not tyrannical, not evil. Then maybe the issue is not whether or not Islam is or is not an enemy of the United States, but rather individual actors and, you know, and the morality of the person committing the act. You know, so, I mean, you can set this up, you know, but the first question is, who are the true practitioners of the Islamic faith? Those chanting death to America or those who are our allies, trading partners, and defense partner? You have to answer that question before you can answer whether or not Islam is or is not an enemy of the United States, right? So, but I set that up to, in order to completely clarify here as I was relating, you know, Islam into the example of ideological subversion, but it's only to the extent that they're only that they're using attacks on Christianity, trying to suppress Christianity while trying to go off and expose, promote, and celebrate Islam. It's creating that, you know, imbalance. They're trying to hide and suppress one side, that is the traditional view and faith of the United States. You know, unquestionably, you know, if you take a look at the history of the United States, that is, you know, traditionally the predominant religion, although all religions have been accepted, while trying to go off and then go by and say, hey, this religion over here is okay. You know, so you kind of get that. And then when you put that into the same context of what they're going off, trying to associate, you know, whiteness, trying to associate, you know, race as the determination that if you're white, you're automatically a horrible, evil, garbage person, and then trying to associate conservatism or just whiteness or the founding fathers with Aryan Nation, KKK, and racism. You get how they keep pushing more and more, trying to say anybody, who ascribes to the traditional views of this country is horrible, evil, and garbage people, and how they keep trying to go off and say that time and time again, repeat it over and over and over again, hoping that the repetition will cause you to accept it as truth. So anyways, there's a lot more that I wanted to say, and I've even gone a lot further than I thought I would. I mean, here it is as the 41 minute mark, which means this is twice as long as what I thought this episode was going to be, as I keep, going through and deep diving into this. And there were still about, two more segments, or three more segments of the show. The last segment was just going to be real quick that I had set up and planned to get through that I didn't. But you know what? Whatever. It goes on long. I want to make sure that I fully explain, my thoughts here and how we can and really expose all the examples that are happening in broad daylight of ideological subversion and trying to and what the Marxists are doing and trying to go off and say America, anything that is traditional American values is horrible and evil. And then try to expose that the ideology of the Marxists and Leninists that, results in mass death, starvation, and oppression. No, that's the good views, and how they go off and they try to do all of this association, always trying to associate your ideological opponents, or try to associate everything about America as evil, even though we've been the greatest force for good, and how they always try to say, immutable characteristics determine good or bad. So in any event, I'm going to go ahead and leave the episode right there. I'd like to thank you all for listening in. You know to subscribe, leave me ratings and reviews, share this on social media. Thank you so much for listening in, and I will be back again soon.